Kohen, who was a Kohen, said in Yiddish, Ich wollte nicht da reingesteckt mein Kopf in die Hechel mit Azan Chilos und mit Azan Trelis. I would not stick my head into the Chavetz Chaim being a Kohen said, I would not stick my head into the Hechel with this kind of Trelis. So this Shita, except for Radzina, Chassidim, and Breslovers, don't use, they will continue to use this. So the Gedali Yisrael asked me, including Rabbi Liashev, that I should make these available for people. They should be able to show kids. Okay, we had a machoikis, this is this shita, that's that shita. So this was a Radzina shita, and anybody who wants to have one as a souvenir, they're $30. We actually, that's what it costs us to preserve them, put them in special lucite. We also have them loose. These are so the kids can feel what the texture of a chilazin according to Radzina Rebbe's shita was. Then along comes the chief rabbi of Eretz Yisrael. His name is Rav Herzog. And he says, wait, we have to find a new opinion. And he comes up with an idea that there's a kind of purple snail called the Jantina snail, which has a shell. And this Jantina snail, Rav Herzog was also very well aware of chemistry, and if you mix the blood with certain things, it's going to be the color of Tchelis. The problem with this is there's a Tosfos. Tosfos says that the chilazin has dam, hachilazin, that's not the dam that it lives on. In other words, it's in a separate sack. You have to kill the jantina snail in order to make the trellis. Doesn't fit. So we have these available. What happened is there's a restaurant in Paris that has this on the menu. So I made a deal with the restaurant. Don't throw out the shells. I get it, we cleaned them, and we charge people $5 for them. You should see, this was Rav Herzog's opinion of the shell from the chilazin. Along comes a new shita. A new shita develops based on the writing of this sefer. The sefer is called the Shilti HaGibarim, which was written 400 years ago by Rav Shmuel Port-de-Leon, and he comes out with a new shita of the chilazin, which became very popular a number of years ago, and it's called murex. And these are shells of a murex. And a murex, in order for it to be defended in the sea, that other creatures don't eat it up, it has the shell that it lives within. And on my two DVDs on Trelis, we take you scuba diving under the water. We show you all these creatures alive. And you actually can see how it peeks out from this particular thing. And the new shita in Eretz Yisrael came out that this is the chilazin. And one day, I was very close with Rabbi Liashev. And one day, Rabbi Liashev turns to me and he says to me, Nu vos vidzayim mit chelis? Because Rabbi Liashev used to give me projects that he wanted me to work on. 20 years ago, Israeli newspaper in Eretz Yisrael gave out an article that Rabbi Liashev holds from the new shita of Tchelis. Rabbi Liashev, I never saw him so upset like I saw him then. Rabbi Liashev was very upset. It got worse when Rav Feivel Cohen wrote him a letter that I just finished reading that you hold from the new shita of Tchelis. And Rabbi Liashev gave me a copy. I published it in my book on Shmoyz. Rabbi Liashev gave me a copy of the letter he wrote back to Rav Feivel. And he writes them like this. I never said such a thing. And I don't know the mitzias. I don't know the details of it. He says, but I know one thing. That first came out one shita, and it was disproven. Then came out a second shita, and it was disproven. Umi idea. If someone's going to come along and disprove this new shita. This is what he wrote Rav Feivel. 9 years ago, Rav Feivel, during one of his meetings of visits to my museum, so I was showing him different things. So he asked me, well, about Tchelis. I said, listen, it's a complicated subject, this and that. So he says, you know, if you have updates, let me know. About 2 years before Rabbi Liashev passed away, it was just as he outside. I'm a little emotional right now. About 2 years before he passed away, I walk into Rabbi Liashev one day and he says to me, Nu vos vidzayim mit chelis. Where Rabbi Liashev was asking me, when are you going to get into the whole subject? And, you know, I was involved in many projects. It wasn't something I, you know, was on the top of my list. So I said, "You will take the arbeiten of them jetzt? You want me to work on it now?" I said, "Jetzt." Jetzt, Rabbi Yashiv says, "Jetzt." I pick up the phone. I call up the head of Machan Atchelus in Eretz Yisrael. I said, "I'd like to spend 2 days with you. Give me all your ayahs that the Miurex is the chilas." And he starts DNA and the this and the this. I said, "Give me your ayahs that it's this." So I went through all their ayahs. And then I went back to Rabbi Yashiv and showed him 17 reasons why the Miurex cannot be the chilas. So let's begin. Number one, we spoke before that when the actual color comes out, the Rambam says it has to be black. It's not black. Number two, Rashi says it's an earth creature, not a sea creature. If you look at the Noi de Bihudin in Menachas and Hatcheles, he says, Oyla min ha'aretz, not min ha'yam. It's daima le'yam, but it's Oyla min ha'aretz. So if you go with the Noi de Bihuda, Shittas Rashi is that it's an earth creature, not a sea creature, Bechlal. That knocks away all three Shittas. Then I went through and showed him many more ayahs that this cannot be the chilazim, because the Brisker Rav says that the chilazim was nignas, it was put away. Why was it put away? Because our gufim, as it says in many places, were not roy to wear tchelas. Well, the murex has been known throughout history. It's never disappeared from history. It wasn't something recently new discovered. And the Brisker Rav says it's got to be something that was totally unknown.
What's his source?
Many. In my book, I show all the Makar. I can't go
through.
He sources all the way. Oh, absolutely. Not only that, the New York Times got involved. This is an article in February 28th, 2011.
Science Times.
New York Times.
No, Science Times.
Science Times. Right. Sorry? Science
Times. No.
Right here.
Tuesday.
It was Monday, February 28, 2011. Article, rediscovered ancient color is reclaiming Israeli interest. What happened? In Masada, they found a little fragment of a garment that had a little bit of blue on it. So they send it to chemical analysis tests, and sure enough, it's the murex. And the New York Times runs with the story. We have proof that it was there, really. Because the problem is, it's not a pair of tzitzis, it's a piece of cloth. Well, I have an Egyptian piece of cloth of murex from Egypt. That's not it's murex too.
Wasn't it normal, weird, everybody wore it?
It was commonly worn
by
anyone. Chaylas would have been worn by royalty in the Islamic period. Before that, it was worn by everyone. Mordechai Yotze Belavush Malchus, Chaylas before. Royalty also had it. Later, they made a gzera that you were not allowed to use certain colors. Tyrian purple was not allowed to be used, only by royalty. But in the ancient Roman and Greek period, if you can buy expensive clothing, you can buy yourself tchelas. In fact, the Gemara says that Nebuchadnezzar made everybody leave Eretz Yisrael. Who did he leave? He left the people who know how to get the chilas and then tchelas, because he wanted it for himself. He had self-interest. What happened with Jews was that after the period of Bayesheni, when the Romans wanted to completely take away any zecher of Yidden being in Yerushalayim, they renamed the city to Ilia Kapitalia. They ushered Yidden to go to Yerushalayim. They didn't let the Jews live in many places where they were doing it. There was a 90-year period at the end of the Roman Empire in the Islamic period where the Jews were not allowed to do it. So till now it was father to son, and then there was no more left. If you look at the Ga'onim, some Ga'onim had Chelas, some say they don't even know what it is. The Rif, others all deal with it, each one, and I show this in my books and on my DVDs, which ones had it, which ones didn't. The Rambam was the doctor of the Sultan. So the Rambam was very clear in knowing what Chilazin was and what the Tchelis was. Because he was half his day, more than half his day, in the palace. So when the Rambam comes along and tells you details about the Tchelis, we have to accept that the Rambam had a very good idea about the Tchelis. And later, it's Nignas. So therefore, we have a general problem, which is A, all the Shitas have gone with, and now they developed a fourth Shita in Eretz Yisrael. There's a Mekubal in Eretz Yisrael, and this particular Mekubal, he has a publication. And his name is Rabbi Morgenstern. What's that? Yeah, and Rabbi Morgenstern has a publication, and he published a new shita that it's the horseshoe crab. Well, the horseshoe crab has blue blood, and it's used in medical science a lot for many different things. The horseshoe crab is today used. So I gave out two updated DVDs on the Tchelis mystery.
But it never disappeared.
What?
But it's been around.
That's part of its problem. It has other problems too, because the Rambam is clearly telling us that when it comes out, the Dama Chilazin, the reason you wear black stripes and yitzitzes is because it's black. Horseshoe crab blood is blue. So I basically disproved all the shitas. And I want to tell you something. I never saw Rabbi Yashiv get excited, except once. I'm sitting and going over with him the 17 rais that the Chilazin can be the Yorix. And I'm leaning over, and Rabbi Yashiv grabs my wrist, and he says, "Dosa bich gemeint, as eine wird kommen in Weisnas in Ishli Chilazin." And that's what, and he told me to tell Rav Feivel, when I get back to America, that this is what the rais are. So I updated these two films on the whole machlokes, but as a general interest subject, you know, if you're interested in having your own cuttlefish or your own thing, it costs you $5 for these things, and you can see it. You can show kids this is what the machlokes of the Chilazin was. Another subject that Rebelsky very much wanted, for 20 years he was bothering me to do it, was to identify the Membez Masois of where Bnei Yisrael went.
Rebelsky wore tape.
Yes.
Yeah. And which hand is he wearing?
He wired the Murex, because he says he can't think of a better option.
I've been here 17 times.
I
know you sat with him. You told us last time we came from Museum.
Yeah, I sat with him. And Rebelsky said to me, "Listen, it doesn't fit with Rashi. It doesn't fit with the but I don't see another thing." So I said to him, "But this things it says it was Nignas." So he just threw his hands up. He didn't say anything. I had a certain
why
kind of
weird.
Because he already put it on. He didn't want to take it off. There's some people like that. Some people.
What was the downside then, wearing it?
The downside, the Rebbe Marshab of Chabad said, it's worse to wear tchelis that's not correct than not wearing tchelis.
Why?
Because you're taking a dog tummy and you're being mevazi yitzitzis. So there's a shita that holds that if you're going to wear the wrong one, if you're doing something that is because it's the real tchelis, that's one thing. But that's why even the Chafetz Chaim, others.
Why did Rebelsky not take it off?
He didn't. He didn't. I had many conversations with him. He didn't take it off. But he didn't. This is the Metzius.
I just remember last time we came to the museum, you said he took it off. He was the real one. I want to know what happened.
Because that was before. That conversation was prior to Rabbi Yashiv saying to me, "You got to do it now." So that was a period of time. It was a few years before. It wasn't of last year. Right. We're talking about probably seven years ago.
Two or three years ago, you said there was a place that they found a lot of shells. Remember that?
Yeah.
Yes. That was but that's again. That's
again. They found, and I brought you the shells. I have from the shells that they found.
That was the Murex shells.
This is the Murex shells. They found them. These are 2,000-year-old Murex shells. You could see the hole where they would take out in order to use it, but they use it as dye. So Rebelsky tied it that we see that ancients used it, but that doesn't still fit with the problem, and that's why it's not. It was more than 2-3 years ago.
Have you heard of Rav Heschel Schachter?
Sat in my museum.
Rav
Heschel Schachter sat in my museum. We went through the whole thing. He holds it. What can I tell you? I'm not here to convince you.
I'm here to lay out the facts. Look up the Gemara. Go through. By the way, I invented a new thing. It's called pop-up Mara Mekoymus. On my DVD is actually what I say. You pop up with all the Mara Mekoymus. So you could just stop the film. Look it up. So if I mention this one, that one, I have pop-up Mara Mekoymus on the film as it's going through. Those are the two DVDs on
set. You can record it, by the way. You can ask them when you come back.
Okay, you can record
this.
So, the Rambam says that when it comes out, it's black.
Then what happens?
And then you process it with other things, and it's going to become blue. Now, one issue I've been working on for over 10 years is to identify the Membeis Masois. Where did Bnei Yisrael go? It begins by identifying the location. So Rabelski told me many times that the idea that Har Sinai is where people believe it, this is a Christian idea. There's no basis in anywhere of our Mekoros that this is where Har Sinai was. It doesn't even make sense because in the 18th dynasty of Egypt, they controlled the Sinai Peninsula. So if Moshe Rabbeinu is running away from Paray, how is he running to the middle of the Sinai? So if you look through the Mekoros that Chazal tell us, and things that were recorded at that time, we're going to start with Josephus. Josephus tells us clearly that Har Sinai is the tallest mountain in the Madian area. Madian is what we call today Saudi Arabia. And this is where he puts Har Sinai. It gets even better, because a lot of the names that the Torah uses, what?
Yeah, it's pretty far.
So the Yidden live Yidna by the city of Ramses and the city of Pison. Where is Pison today? The Torah Gemyonis says Pison is the city of Tanis, T-A-N-I-S. You can Google it on your Google Maps. Tanis is in Egypt, and it's towards the upper part, towards Eretz Yisrael. Where is the city of Ramses? The Mitzrayim had the same names, Pisum and Ramses. Last time I was here, I brought you an Egyptian hieroglyphics dictionary. And they have the same city, and it's called the city of Avaris, A-V-A-R-I-S. So the Yidden are by Pisum and Ramses. They could go straight across the Nilus, up to Eretz Yisrael, think of Israel today, the Eilat border of Egypt, and go straight into Eretz Yisrael. Vayehi b'shalach pareyes ha'om, v'loy nacham alekim derech Eretz plishtim. You go up the coast, what are you going to come across? You're going to come across all the cities of the plishtim. Kiryat Gat. Gat was a city of the plishtim. You're going to come across Ashkelon, all of the cities along the coast. So Hashem could have taken Bnei Yisrael right into Eretz Yisrael. Le'nachem alekim derech Eretz plishtim ki karavu ki amar alekim pen yinachem ha'amberes ha'machama v'shavu mitzrayim. Vayasev alekim, Hashem takes them all the way around. And now they're going to go what we know today as the Gulf of Aqaba. And along the way, they're going to come to the place called Esam, the Egyptians called Esam. On my new film, I gave out three films on the Masois of Bnei Yisrael. And I went to those places. I've been to Saudi Arabia. I've been to Jordan. And I actually take you to these locations. And I show you the actual names. The Egyptians call them. And some of the names of the Masois have survived Ad Hayom Hazeh. We just had in Parshas Maaseh. Divine God. Google this, Diban, D-I-B-H-A-N, Diban. It's a city in Jordan. Ad Hayoim Hazeh. Divan God. Me Aror Asher Asfas Nachal Arnoin. Aror is this name in Jordan of the city. Be'oin, that they changed the name to Ma'oin. It's called Ma'ain, M-A-I-N. Saudi Arabia. And I plotted and I charted the whole Membeis Masois. And I show you its location, where Bnei Yisrael went to, and how they went along, when they went around, when they wouldn't give them permission to cross. Why didn't they give them permission to cross? Moshe Rabbeinu tells the king of Moab, I'm gonna go Naver Begulcha. I'm not gonna go not Liyamin Liyasol. I'm gonna go in the king's way. What do they call it? Adayim is that the king's way. You can take it straight up, and it takes you right across. So I released this year 3 new DVDs on the whole root of the Masoyos of Bnei Yisrael. Show you Kaddish Barnea. Now here is an amazing thing about Kaddish. There's two things. There's Kaddish and Kaddish Barnea. A lot of people, the Ramban says, they're two different places. I'll give you an example you'll understand. Newark. Where's Newark? New Jersey, right? How about Newark, Rhode Island? It's exactly 2 hours of car drive. Newark. It's called Newark, Rhode Island. So this basically is, there's Delaware. I said Newark, I meant Delaware, I'm sorry. Newark, Delaware. Get in your car, you can drive from New Jersey, you can go there. One of them is in Midbar here, another one is in a different location. So the Ramban says it's two different places. There's a mist. I read 11 ancient languages, including Roman Latin. And while I was doing the research, I found an amazing, amazing thing. Yosefet tells us that he visited the cave of Miriam. Where's the cave of Miriam? This is how all the English translations have it. It's by the big white stone. In Roman Latin, the word Petra means stone. Blanca means white. So Petra Blanca means the white stone. So the English translations of Josephus all say it's by the big white stone. But if you look at the original that Josephus wrote, it says it's in the place called the big white stone. What difference does that make? If you ever see Petra, Petra is red. There's something called, you can Google this, called Little Petra. And Little Petra is called by the Arabs Al Bayida. What does Al Bayida mean? The white stone. Al Bayida means white stone. They called Little Petra, what we call Little Petra, they called it Al Bayida. Now, if you look in the Onkelos, he says that Miriam is buried in Bir Kam. What? You got it?
Also in Jordan.
It's in Jordan.
Wadi Musa.
Wadi Musa. Very good. On my DVDs, I go through, I take you to those places. Onkelos says Bir Kam. Bir Kam is the Aramaic name, what the Arabs called Al Bayida, the white stone. So I identified, for years there's been a fight, where is Kaddish? Where was Miriam buried? On the DVDs I show you, and I take you there. And I show you this is the location. Now we're in the city, she's buried here, we don't know. Because the Nabataeans built over on top. And when they built over on top, we know that there are a lot of Jewish things underneath, and they were known to build over them. So we don't know exactly, but we know very clearly where it is. Then we get to Har Sinai. Har Sinai is Jabal, there's two names, because people confuse that. One is called Jabal al-Awaz, which is the wrong name. And the other one is called Jabal Mekla. Jabal al-Awaz means the mountain of almonds. Jabal Mekla means the burnt mountain. And this burnt mountain was first identified by people called Kernuk and Williams. And there were people who obviously have gone there. What's the problem there in Saudi Arabia? The problem there is that they built a military base for a missile defense system at that area. So going there, you put your life at risk of being labeled a spy, which is a life sentence, basically. 6 people have been there. We got put together footage of all the 6 that have gone there. We've interviewed them. And it's amazing, because within Jabal Mekla, or misidentified as Jabal al-Awaz, is a massive cave. And that's the cave that Eliyahu HaNavi went into. That's the cave where Moshe went. And what's fascinating about it is there's so many details that Yosefin describes Har Sinai, which fit exactly with this location. Not only that, but Yosefin says, if you were to go today, Yosefin says, to Rephidim, which was one stop before Har Sinai, you will see the stone that Moshe Rabbeinu split. not to be confused with the stone he hit after 40 years. The first time the Abish told him to split the stone. It was only after Miriam died, which we know today is by Al-Baida, which is in near Petra, Little Petra. That's where he was not supposed to hit the stone. But the first time Yosefin says, go there today, he writes, and you will see the stone that Moshe Rabbeinu split. Ranover Abayisai, I'd like to show you the stone that Moshe Rabbeinu split. Pick that up for a second. It's on the cover of my new DVD. This is the stone. It's 65 feet tall. No, well, Rabbi didn't find this one. It was found actually by a family that wasn't Ron White. It was much later. This is the stone. It's called the split rock. This is the stone. It's 65 feet tall. We have pictures of standing underneath within the stone. The geologist have tested the whole formation of stones around it, and you're talking about an area that doesn't get more than a half an inch of rain every 5 years. They said they can tell there was a massive flood of water exactly there. So I gave out a new DVD showing where Rephidim is and where all of these masses. So we have it broken down from Mitzrayim until they got to the Yamsuf. I updated the one on Kriyas Yamsuf. This is now 1 hour. This one goes from going from the Yamsuf until they get to one stop in front of Har Sinai. This is a very, very fascinating discussion.
No, we don't preach.
They're $20 each. $20 each. Now, I want to show you now another very interesting thing, which Reb Chaim Kanievsky asked me very recently. I was in Eretz Yisrael by Reb Chaim, and Reb Chaim said to me, maybe you could explain to me this Gemara. Those of you who learn Chulin are going to know exactly what I'm talking about. You're a lot of shecht with many different things. Are you a lot of shecht with a shard of glass? So there's a whole discussion in the Gemara. Oh, very good. So there's an afkemina between a shoichet that shechs with glass that's tolush, or a glass that's mechubel lekarka. So I'm sitting by Reb Chaim, and he says to me, "Vosip shad glaz versus mechubel lekarka. What's glass mechubel? Whenever you have a volcano, when the lava spews out of the mountain, and the lava hits quickly on Earth, it will actually cool, and it will become what's known as obsidian. This here is a 2,000-year-old arrowheads that were found from obsidian, and they're still sharp. So if you take the neck of a chicken or of an animal and you have obsidian sticking out of the ground and you run the neck of the chicken over the piece of obsidian and it's smooth, that's called glass, that's mechubel lekarka. Versus if it's separated, that's the nafkemina that we make between the zchuchas that's mechubel lekarka or the ones that is not mechubel lekarka.
Like that extracts sand, it also makes glass.
Yeah, it's called obsidian. Earth science, sixth grade.
It's cool. It's glassy. That's the way it's amorphous. It's the way the crystallization happens.
Yeah, it's the crystallization. So for those of you who are visiting Israel soon, I'm going to give you a little experiment. If you guys want to know what Toilas Shani was, sure. Toilas Shani. So the Evan Ezra says it's the blood of the crimson worm, the blood of the Kremis. If you go to Israel, there are oak trees that are called crimson oak trees. So I actually made a spool of thread recently by squeezing and killing all these crimson worms, and that's how they make this color red. Okay. So look in the Evan Ezra. The Evan Ezra tells you that it's from the blood of crimson worms. So if you're actually in Israel soon, go to any taxi driver, tell them, show me a crimson oak tree. When the branches separate, take your hands and stick it right there. There are these big female crimson worms. And give them a good squeeze, and you'll get crimson oak blood all over, worm blood all over your fingers. And that's what Teilat Shani was made from. So, this here is what the Eben Ezra is teaching us. Finally, I'd like to show you what is Argamon. Argamon, all the Rebbes say, is purple wool. And that would be the wrong answer. The answer is Machloikis. I always tell the kids, if you have a test, you don't know the answer, just write Machloikis. You'll always be right. Afterwards, you'll find out it's a Machloikis. You can tell the teachers all love me, basically. Well, there's a Machloikis between the Rambam and other Mefarshim. If Argamon is purple or it's red. What is the Machloikis? In Egyptian hieroglyphics, there is a word called Argamon. I showed this to Reb Chaim. The word Argamon is a color similar to magenta. This is an ancient garment that has, it's between a purple and a red. And how do you classify this in halacha? Some classify it as purple, some classify it as red. So try this out. Go to Home Depot. You know, you can get yourself a color chart of all the different things. By the way, that's how my first time I got in trouble. I was learning about Tcheles. How did I get interested? My Rebbe said, Tcheles is bloyevol. It's blue wool. Of course, that wasn't going to be easy for me. So I tried to get my Rebbe's attention. So you know what kids do when the Rebbe doesn't want to ignore them? You start going like this, right? Back and forth. 4 o'clock comes, the Rebbe doesn't answer me the last 20 minutes. I'm walking home from Yeshiva. I lived in Crown Heights, and there's a hardware store along the way. And I walk into the hardware store, and I said to the guy behind the counter, I said, do you sell paint? He said, sure. He's an old Jew that wasn't religious. He says, what do you want? I said, do you have a paint chart of all the color blues that you have? He gives me a paint chart. I said, can I borrow it for one day? He was so excited. A kid, 8 years old, wants to have a paint chart. He said, you could have it. Next day, come with my knapsack to yeshiva. My Rebbe starts teaching about Tcheles. Rebbe, which color on the paint chart is Tcheles? Smack! Whack! And I was thrown out of class. He threw me out with the paint chart together. But it's not such a bad question, because there are 7 sheets. What color blue is Tcheles? Sky blue, evening sky blue, and on my film, I show you all 7 shittas. Now, even if you were to decide that you want to wear tchelis, there are 9 shittas how to string the tchelis on the yitzitz. So even though I don't hold for tchelis, I still, as I said, I show all shittas. If you like 7-layer cake, you're definitely going to like Rav Amram Gaon's shita of tchelis. Looks like a 7-layer cake. This here is the Ravid shita. This is Tosfos. Rebelski used to wear Tosfos the Shita. I asked him why Tosfos. He says, at least if I wear Tcheles, and I come in front of Bez and Shomayel, and they asked me, I said, I wouldn't buy Tosfos. That's what he told me.
There's no 7, 8, 11, 13?
It's the next one,
right? Here, the Chinuch is like this.
Where do they get, where's that Shita?
It's not for a little.
It's mystical.
You come to me, I'll show you inside everything. This is the Vilna Gaon Shita. The Rambam, according to the Taimonim, notice how close the Rambam like the Taimonim is to Rav Amram Gaon Shita. This over here is the Rambam with the Ksharim Kfulim. This here is the Radzina Rebbe Shita. And this is the Rambam with the Chamish Ksharim. So even if you were to know that you want to wear Tcheles, it's very simple. You would have to start wearing 9 shittas of Tcheles to be yoitza all the different shittas. Reb Chaim Pinchas Scheinberg. I'll tell you a funny story.
Did he wear Tcheles in one of his?
He wore some Tcheles.
Okay. Did he wear all
some.
4?
He didn't wear all of them because he told somebody that he was close with. He says, if I would wear all of them, I would have to add 292 another pairs of tzitzis. He had trouble going around with it as it was.
Okay.
He actually used to safety pin his tzitzis thing. By the way, I have a couple
groups
of
25 he used to have.
Yeah, I have a couple of his tzitzis by me in my museum, if anybody ever wants to see them. Oh, I can show you with the holes that he used to actually. I helped his son with his yeshiva for something, so he gave me as a gift a couple of pairs of tzitzis from Chaim Pinchas Scheinberg. But, you know, he used to clump them all together, and if you had to wear all the shittas of Tchelis, it would be almost impossible for him to walk around Bechlal. I can't vouch because I didn't watch him wearing them, so I wouldn't be able to.
You want to rotate day after day different shittas.
Right. Okay, now, the Nov Minsky Rebbe asked me to make a whole series on Amunah and Bitachon. Yom Tovim come around, and you ask a person, what's the story of Hanukkah? They made Neiris, they had this, they had a war. And I asked them, okay, wait, stop. Tell me exactly when Yehuda HaMakabi was killed, when was Yonason killed, what happened, what was the story? No clue. So I, this year, gave out two new films called The Story of Hanukkah, where I teach you the story from Alexander the Great all the way through to Shimon HaMakabi, the last of the Maccabees making peace with the Greeks. What happened? How it worked? Oh, we have a game of dreidel. Why do we have dreidel? We have dreidel because the Greeks had a game called dreidel, and the Yidden used to sit and come learn Torah, and they took out the Greek dreidels. After the story of Hanukkah, they had made a game dreidel. So how do you play Greek dreidel? I teach you how to play Greek dreidel. I have an ancient Greek dreidel at the museum. No, the Greek dreidels was a gambling game. You know how it worked? This is how it works. It looks like the game of American game of tops. You spin it, and you count. And you spin it and you count, whoever the dreidel will stand up longer, the top will stand longer, is the winner. So two people put down money on the table, that's the way the Greeks play dreidel. Right, you get the right spin, has to be centered so it stays up longer, that's the, I teach you all games. By the way, handball was a Roman game, and just in case you didn't know about that, handball was a game the Romans used to play. In fact, Titus
with a bounce,
or with a bounce.
With a bounce, how they bounce?
I teach you how to play Roman handball game.
No, they had both a bounce.
Absolutely. Now, there's all the different kinds of games that they used to use. We try to show the kids these are where the games came from, you know, and they don't really understand what happened with Rish Lakish. Ask the average person, what's the story of Rish Lakish?
Bandit.
He was a bandit. Anybody else? Three shittas. There's a Bavli, Yerushalmi. Yeah. And there's the Aruch shita. So I'll show you exactly. One shita is, Reish Lakish means the head of the highway robbers. That's what the words in Aramaic mean. At one point, he was the head of the highway robbers. He used to rob people. Second shita is, the Gemara says that Reish Lakish once sold himself to a Ludoi. What does the word Ludoi mean? Machlokes. Mm. So there were people called Lydians, and the Lydians were, a group of Lydians were cannibals. So he sold himself as food. The day they were going to kill him, you were allowed to ask your last request. So he took a leather bag with a hard ball, and he said, my last request is that I could hit every one of you 1.5 times. They laughed. And I'll tie you up and hit you 1.5 times. Well, he takes it, and he one zets, he killed them all, except for one guy. After one time, he was grimacing with pain, was smiling. I said, oh, you're still smiling, I still have another half a bang. He hit him, and he that's the Bavli. Yerushalmi argues with that. Yerushalmi says, what does a Ludai mean? He sold himself to a Lunista. L-U-N-I-S-T-A. Lunista means the head of a school of gladiators. And Reish Lakish became a gladiator. He used to fight in the stadiums of Rome as sport. Now everybody thinks Reish Lakish became a Baal Tshuva, and that would be wrong. Reish Lakish, Tosfos says, was already a Gadol b'Yisrael who went off the Derech. He lost his learning, and Rabbi Yochanan brought him back. So there's a lot of misconceptions people have about things, including Reish Lakish. How do we know Reish Lakish was a Gadol b'Yisrael before? Because the Gemara says certain things he said, Kach shamaiti me'avoisai. So I've heard from my parents. His parents weren't stump people, he was mamish a person, he went off the derech. And then he did tshuva. But the Gemara says, you want to know who Reish Lakish was? After he did tshuva, he never spoke to you in the street, unless you were Tzadik Gomer. Ad kidei kach. Why didn't he speak to people in the streets? I explained this to kids. Imagine if Rosh Lakish would walk down the street. Hey, I remember when you were the bandit. Oh, I remember when you robbed me. I remember this. Rosh Lakish didn't talk to anyone if it was a tzaddik gomer. Ad kidei kach that the Gemara says that if Rosh Lakish spoke to you on the street, you could lend that person money below yedim because he's a neman, l'shalom. So I clarify all the Greek games. Mesachik b'kubya does not mean playing cards. Kubya is the Roman Latin word for dice.
Cubes.
In the volume 2 of Hanukkah, I teach you, Pashut, how the games work. Where's chess mentioned in Shas? Iskundri. Rashi says Iskundri is Eges. Eges is the French word for chess. I show you where checkers is mentioned. Now the Gemara has an amazing story. What happens if a person lends another person money? Comes to pay, the Gemara says, Maisa de Rabba. Story of Rabba. You guys know the story of Rabba? Amazing story. Guy lends money to someone else. And he says to him, listen, pay me back in 30 days. We'll use the number, 100 zuz. Comes 30 days, the guy asks him for money. I paid you. What do you mean you paid me? I gave it to you. Really, you gave it to me? Let's go to Rabba. We're going to go into Beis Medrash. I want you to promise in front of a Beis Din that you gave me back the money. He walks into Beis Medrash. And Rabba says, you gave me back the money? He says, one second. He takes off his jacket. Hold my cane. Hold my jacket. He gives him the jacket. Rabbi says, you promised him that you gave back the money. You're going to be willing to take a shua. He says, 100%. It was Makabal Shua. The guy gets so mad. He takes the guy's cane, who had just given to hold it, and he gives it a zetz on the floor. And hollowed in the cane is all the money. So the Gemara learns out from this that a person has to swear al das bezdin, not al das atzmai, because of maisa deraba. If a person says this checker piece or this chess piece, I call it a dinar. So I gave you back checker pieces. I gave you back. So that's where we come from. So there's a lot of things. A lady who gets hooked on games, the Gemara says. Her husband comes in front of Bezdin and says, my wife doesn't do anything in the house. She's busy playing games all day. It's a whole thing. And the Gemara lists out checkers, chess, backgammon. They're all ancient games. I teach you how these games used to work and where. And some of them are different. For example, they did not have a queen in the game of chess.
Elephant,
he knows. They didn't have a bishop. They had?
I forgot. Sorry.
Okay, so I show you all the different games. So that's another thing I've been working on, is on the story of Hanukkah. Questions about anything? Any questions you have to
make? Yeah, why do some of them not have knots?
You mean on here?
Yeah.
Okay, we only made it as a demonstration purpose, meaning to show you the different ways of doing it. We didn't complete it complete in that sense.
The open notes,
yeah. But we want to show you how the different ways they basically did it.
Do they have that in between each knot? What is that?
Long discussion, can't end.
What's with the cherry and the bones and the cherry?
Okay, so on the thing, I show you all the rayas. Where is Migdol? Where's Piachiris? Rashi says, Ben Shnei HaSloima, I'll show you where the Shnei HaSloima. It's all on that DVD. If you're interested in something, that's something that is really interesting.
In the way of a beach.
Yeah, I'll show you exactly where it was. Certain thing he was right, certain he was wrong.
What are the shofars doing here?
Oh, so I brought you some shofars. I forgot to show it to you. Sorry. How much more time do we have?
1 hour.
I'll talk. Stop me when you want me to stop. So I want to show you something that's really interesting.
He loves this.
This is what a real shofar looks like. All your shofars that you use, they're all looking like this. When you take it off the horn of the animal, they don't look like this. So what do? They cook it for about 10 minutes in a pot. And when you cook it, you can actually straighten them out. Yeah. So this shofar is a regular shofar. They're easy to blow. Oh, it's good. Very easy to plot. These guys are very difficult to plot. This is a shofar from the Jewish community of Amsterdam from 200 years ago. It takes a lot of energy. So to make it easier for the Baal Tikir, today we straighten out the shofars. And this is important because I got kicked out of class for asking my Rebbe where shofars came from, because it doesn't look like the ones I saw on my farm that I had just visited. That's why I made a museum.
But so you didn't get hit.
What?
Because you didn't get hit.
Yeah, I got hit plenty, you know, whatever. But I was a chutzpin yak. I didn't say, my Rebbe hit me and therefore, no. I said, oh, my Rebbe doesn't know. Okay, so I'm going to ask everyone I know. I was, that chutzpah, you know. That's the way it was. Now, I brought you an interesting thing to see. When you take out a shofar, you take out the horn. This is called the zacharus of a shofar. You cook it for 5 minutes and you could release the marrow bone, basically. Gemara says, what happens if you have such a bone and you didn't take it out, you make a hole through it.
Is it actually bone?
This is the bone.
Keratin? There's actually bone in there?
It's bone.
Really?
Yeah.
Bone inside a bone.
No, the outside is
this
not
is keratin.
Yeah.
This is bone. Well, this one I didn't finish, but I have one that I finished. This right here is a shofar shel para.
Oh, wow.
Guys, this one I didn't finish, this one I finished. What's the problem? Hakol kshir and chutz mishel para. The Gemara says gildi. Gildi is the Aramaic word for layers. And if you look here, you can see the layers on the shofar. I'll pass it around. And I'm going to blow you a 100% puzzle of shofar. What's the problem? Every year a new layer grows, and these are called shofaros, not one shofar. So pass it around. You can actually see the layers on the horn. So since Elul's coming in a few weeks, I wanted you to see this, all the different shofars. This guy is my favorite shofar. No, this particular shofar, if you go to Ein Gedi, you'll see these ibexes running around. And according to Rashi, Shitas Rashi, Tzvi is an ibex, and the female is called the Yael. So those people named Yael, their name is wild goat, basically. Just in case you needed to know that. So this right here is an actual shofar of an ibex, and once in 50 years, on Yovel, on Yom Kippur of Yovel, they would blow one tekiah from this shofar. Anybody got a stopwatch? Set your stopwatch to zero. I'm going to blow you a tekiah gedolah from the shofar. And what? And this is what you basically would want. We have a Baal Tikir here, anybody? Oh, excellent. Perfect. I'm up over here. So I'm going to blow it first, and then your Baal Tikir is going to blow it. We happen to be very good friends for a very long time. We both work together in food distribution, so we...
We have time for that.
Besides the museum, we also give out 1,500 packages of food every week called Einik Shabbos. May I stand over here? Tie me, okay? Ready? Tzkiya Gedayla. How long? 15. Okay. Let's do 16 at least. It's got to be over 16. Give him a big round of applause. It's amazing. You should have some respect for your Baal Tikir over here.
How long?
But it's also solid.
So this, once in 50 years, in the Beis Hamikdash, they blew the shofar. Yovel, Yom Kippur of Yovel. I'm really excited about this because yesterday was my 50th birthday. So, yeah. So this over here is a shofar that they would blow once in 50 years. Shofar shel Yael. Yeah, this is it. Now, many Sephardic communities blow kudu shofars. A kudu, this is a kudu. If you come to my museum, I have the full-size animal. He's 11 feet tall.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have a full size of a cat's branch. I couldn't fit them into bar parks.
Easier than the ordinary.
I have a head in it. It has these big horns, and this is where the Sfaradim take the shofar from. Since Hakol Kshayim Chutz Mishal Para, any kosher animal will be okay. The problem is that the Rambam says you should roll an aisle to remind Hashem of Akedas Yitzchak. So many Sephardic communities, when they came to Eretz Yisrael, wanted to follow the Rambam. So today, many Sephardic communities on Rosh Hashanah blow a shofar of an aisle. The rest of Elul and the Bar Mitzvahs, they blow the shofar. Not to be Moitzi Laz on a Minik Kadmoinim, because many rams were not found in Sephardic countries. So that's why they were basically using these shofars.
Does it sound?
No? It's very easy. This is a 200-year-old shofar from the Jewish community of Sana in Yemen. This is a Yemenite shofar. Now, what's really interesting is, you're going to really like this. This past year, you know, when you have a museum, everyone sends you catalogs. I get a Judaica auction catalog from Kestenbaum and Company, big Judaica house in Manhattan, and they're having an auction. I look at the art section, and this Lubavitch Meshachis came up with a brilliant idea. You know, like you have in yeshivas, fire extinguishers, and then it says break the glass in case of fire. He actually made a red box full of glass, and inside he put a shofar, and he said break the glass when Mashiach comes. Right. So I called him up and I said to him, listen, you got to change the shofar. Because the Medrash Rabbah says that the Ayil of Avraham Avinu, the left shofar, they blew by Matan Torah. The right shofar, they're going to blow when Mashiach comes. So you got to put in a shofar of a ram, not a shofar of a kudu. Because this is not what's going to be when Mashiach comes. They're not going to, people imagine, oh, Mashiach is going to blow these long shofars. They're not going to blow it. Not a shofar shel ayil, not a shofar shel dishayin. This is called the dishayin. In Shulchan Aruch it says that this guy is b'diyevet. He's called an araim, an orex, or gemsbach. V'char shor ha'hadilei v'karni araim. This is a shofar of rain. So shor's shofars are very strong. Araim are very beautiful. So this is the easiest shofar in the world to blow, because it's straight. So usually a shofar has to be kofof, it has to be a little bent. But because it's straight, it's only kosher b'diyevet. And, you know, when kids come, I usually play happy birthday for them. It's like a trumpet, basically. So this over here is a shofar of an oryx. Okay, any other questions? Okay, thank you very much for inviting me.